Hello and welcome to the E2I podcast, Voices on the World of Work. This podcast from the European Trade Union Institute offers new perspectives, debates and conversations about ongoing research and education on social Europe, workers' participation, health and safety, the wider labour movement and the world of work. This is E2I podcast. Hello and welcome to E2I podcast, Voices on the World of Work. This is episode 7, COVID-19 with a little help from the EU and the case of Italy. I am Elisa, Communication Officer here at E2I, and I am your host for this E2I podcast series on Voices on the World of Work. Today, I'll be joined in by Silvia Arainone, legal researcher who joined E2I last year and who has been following closely the development in EU labor policies. Hi, Silvia. Ciao.
Ciao, Elisa. Ciao. And thank you so much for making part of this nice initiative.
Yeah, you're welcome. We are really looking forward to talking to you today. How are you doing?
Well, I'm actually doing quite fine. Thanks. I'm just hanging at home and that helps. I'm keeping my spirit up. It's nice.
That's important, and it's also spring, so yeah. We look forward to some sun and some warm weather in the months to come. Nice. Today with you, Silvia, we are going to talk about the different measures that you put into place, both economically and legally, to help member states during the coronavirus outbreak. We already talked about it with Zane a little bit, but with you we will go a bit more into depth in the different instruments that you put into place. And then, because we are both Italians and because we talk about the coronavirus, we cannot not talk about Italy.
Indeed.
So, voilà. Can you tell us a bit more about these measures which have been put into place at the EU level? Because there seem to be a lot. And it's a bit confusing. So maybe you can tell us a bit more about some of them.
Okay, sure. I can try, because indeed the framework is really confusing. And the impression is that much has been done and it's not clear where the boat is going. So for what I could understand until now, the European Union has provided some instrument, some financial resources from the member to the member state so that they can face the most urgent expenditure because of this COVID pandemic. In other words, the European Union has thus created funds or relaxes the rule that member states have to comply with to access those funds. Therefore, member states can expand their public spending.
Okay, so what are exactly these measures? With Zane, we already talked about the SURE, but what are other concrete instruments that were put into place?
Well, the first step that has been taken was the suspension of the European Union budget rules. We all heard about the 3% deficit, the 60% debt rule. Member states cannot spend too much. This is the general rule within the European Union. Now, those rules have been suspended because there is this emergency indeed.
So basically, member states can spend more, they can go beyond the 3% deficit.
Exactly. That was the first step that was taken. That was the first. Then we can, in general, say that the European Union has adopted more flexibility in allocating existing funds. So every year there is a budget. For this budget year, 2020, there are some funds that have not yet been used, and the EU is allocating all those funds to face the emergency of the COVID, so member states can use them.
Fine.
Yeah. So that was the beginning. And then the economic and finance national minister had to meet and to find more, courageous measures. And one that was highly debated was the possibility to activate an ad hoc credit line from this quite famous European Stability Mechanism.
The ESM,
Yeah,
right?
That one, yeah.
And what does this entail?
So basically, this ESM is a mechanism that allows the member state to receive loans. This loan can be quite high because they can be up to the 2% of the country GDP. Therefore, the country can access those loans and expand the public spending. That can indeed be very useful to face this pandemic. However, there are ups and downs regarding the use of the ESM. Mm-hmm. I'm really not an economist, but, well, the public has been talking a lot about that. So maybe if I can give some tips.
Absolutely, yes, because everybody hears about ESM, and we know it from 2008 from Greece. But tell us a bit about what are the pros and cons, indeed.
Well, the first pro is that differently from what happened with the 2008 economic crisis, the use of the ESM fund will not be connected to a conditionality. And this means that the member state that use the fund, that ask to use the fund, will not be obliged to implement those austerity measures that were indeed the condition to use the fund back in the previous financial crisis. Mm-hmm. So that's a good point. It's something that was necessary to adopt, actually. Then the other pro, I will say, is that the loan could be available rather quickly already this year. So the procedure mm-hmm. is already there. And another one is that the interest rate to access those loans, so the cost related to the loans, are very low, close to zero.
Okay.
Those
are the pro cons.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there are also
the downsides,
negative aspects. Yeah. And the first one I would say as an Italian is that the ESM has a very bad reputation. Indeed, especially in the South European member state, the concept of the ESM is very much connected to the experience of the default of Greece and all the austerity measures that have to be taken in order to ensure that Greece will be able to repay the debt. Therefore, the Italian or the Spanish and so forth, they really fear that the use of this fund will be anyway somehow connected to some austerity measure that at some point may arrive, even if it's not debated at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is another down, I would say, is that the credit line of the ESM can only be used to face the direct and indirect cost related to healthcare. So member state will not be free to use the fund as they want, in a way.
Which can be a good thing because, well, healthcare system needs it. But then, the whole economy is impacted. So, I can see.
Yeah, it's true. It's an essential sector to save. And this crisis showed that many member states were not putting enough attention to the situation of the healthcare sector. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. And then the last, are there still doubts?
I will say that this ESM is not really a community solution. It's still a way the member state can rescue their own finance by themselves, in a way, but it's not a clear step towards more financial integration and towards more, in a way, solidarity within the European Union. So I think more financial instruments will need to be set in place in the future.
Yeah. Then now, when it comes to the SURE program, because we talked about it briefly with Zane, can you tell us a bit more? Are there any news?
Just to bring it up again. Yeah, basically this instrument, the SURE, is again an instrument of financial assistance. So through this instrument, member state could expand their spending again. So the European Union will give financial resources to the member state. For the SURE, it will be up to 100 billions in euro. And this will be in forms of loans, again, with very low interest rate. What does it mean? It means that the European Commission will allow member state to receive a pot of money, in a way, loans, that could be used for a specific purpose. And this purpose is to provide income support to those that, because of the coronavirus, are suspended from the working activity or they have to stop totally because they are, for instance, are self-employed. Mm-hmm. So this instrument could be beneficial both for self-employed and employed person in case to face the risk of loss of income.
This is basically, are we going into the direction of unemployment benefit at the EU level? Something like this?
Yeah, I would say that from the point of view of the political discussion, this is a first step. Mm-hmm. The unemployment benefit mechanism or something that was already in the is in the pipeline of the European Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And this, in a way, breaks the glass, I would say. Mm. And on the other hand, is a doc system is really the collection of money that member states could use for that. So member states will not receive the money directly from the European Union.
Yeah.
Sorry, a national citizen will not receive the money directly from the European Union.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
it will be mediated by the member state. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's temporary and it's something, I would say.
But it's a good step into the good in the good direction. Sorry.
I would say so. Yeah.
And then I've been reading that last week the heads of governments agreed on a recovery fund. So what is that? What does that mean?
Yeah, this is a good question because I think this is a nice way, nice wording to postpone a bit further the discussion, because indeed the national head of state and government decided to give a mandate to the European Commission to define how this fund is going to work. Mm-hmm. So we yet don't know it. What we know is that member states will increase their contribution to the European Union. So basically now the European Union budget is more or less the 1% of each country GDP. Mm-hmm. The proposal will be to increase that percentage and probably even double it. That will allow the European Union to have more own resources and therefore to spend more and to give more financial support to member states.
And this was a proposal from the Council, and now it's up to the Commission to come up with details. And when would this be?
Well, in theory, the Commission should provide some more detail, indeed, in May. So we shortly should know. And I read that the main point of discussion and friction among the member states is how this financial support is going to take form, because there are two alternatives and I understood that both will be considered. One is to provide support in the form of loans. So again, like with the ESM or like with the SURE, member states will be lended money from the European Commission at a very low interest rate. Another possibility, which the Southern member state really hope, is that the European Commission will also provide grants. So the member state will not have to give back those money. Mm-hmm. And that will be very helpful, in my opinion. That will be what could send a very nice message of unity and solidarity across Europe.
So now basically we have to wait for the European Commission to come up with details and then wait and see which of the two options the Commission will propose. Am I right?
I would say so. Yeah, and I think it's a highly political debate.
Yeah. I can imagine. And finally, are there any other rules, or those are all, or is there something else still?
No, there is one other rule which is maybe more pragmatic and more immediate to see the effect, and is the fact that the European Union has decided to relax the existing rules on state aid. This means that national governments are now more free to provide direct support to national companies. This was previously quite harshly regulated by the European competition law rules, and now this is going to be easier.
Yeah, and especially during the economic crisis that we are living due to Corona, it is quite immediate release, let's say.
Yeah, we'll say so, and also as labor law repercussion, because I mean, saving in a way companies or directly helping them as also a direct link with maintaining an employment, the people that work in those companies. So it's a bit all connected.
So you're already connecting to my next question that is coming for you. No, that's very good. What about the labor law perspective in all this? So we've been talking about basically the European Commission instruments and the more in general the EU instruments to ensure that member states have enough money to put into place a safety net for both workers and companies and for public budget. But what about then the impact for at the I would say in the world of work, huh? So
on
the labor law perspective.
It's a good question, because now we are talking about money in a way, but how this is gonna transform on actual labor policy, we don't know. And the reason is that the labor reform, the labor policy that will need to be taken from now on, eventually, are up to the member state. The European Commission is not setting a direction. So in a way, all this financial support is to allow national economy and national business and workers to, in a way, survive more or less. But then we don't know. And that's something that can be a bit worrisome, I will say, because if we take a bit the example of Italy, the government now has taken quite quickly certain measure to prevent people to falling immediately into poverty, I will say. So we have the prohibition to dismiss. Company cannot dismiss at the moment. Or the government has the government has suspended mortgages. So there is income support and so forth. But this is in the context of emergency measures. And at a certain point, we don't know in which type of phase, two, three, this emergency state will eventually disappear, we lift it. And then I also guess dismissal will be allowed again, and the income support will diminish and so forth. So this will lead to mass unemployment, may lead, we don't know yet, but there is a risk, it may lead to mass unemployment and to increase poverty. And then normally when the unemployment increase, labor reform kicks in, because business normally need and push quite hard for the relaxation of labor cost that has to face when employing workers, and relaxation of labor cost also means lower labor protection. And
this is what we have seen in 2008. So hope that this will not be happening now. Are you following up a bit what's happening in the different member states? Are we going into the good direction? Can you tell us already something?
Well, for the moment, the image is not yet clear, but the ATC and the ATUI had already collected some interesting data that say that indeed some countries are going in the direction of already relaxing labor protection, or in what is in more technical concept, it means is the flexibilization of labor law. For instance, we have that in Hungary, the employer and the employee are allowed to deviate from existing labor protection by a simple contract. In France as well, they are allowing employer to increase working hour. In Portugal, for instance, instead, they have suspended the right to strike. So these are all measures that indicate that labor law can be somehow suspended for the moment, certain aspect of it, in order to face economic crisis. And this is quite dangerous.
And this is something we already have seen after the the 2008 financial crisis. This didn't go very well.
Well,
we are still suffering
for workers,
the consequences.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, because that led to more flexibilization of working condition. In order to increase the competitiveness of the economy, labor market normally is made more flexible. A more flexible labor market means less work protection. So it's a sort of trade-off between a functioning economy and labor protection. But this is the narrative that has been perpetuated. And hopefully this time, as is a very big emergency hitting everyone at the same way, Hopefully this time is not going to happen that way and we can learn from the past.
And what about this commission, the von der Leyen commission? Because is this commission somehow different than the... Well, we know that it's definitely different than the Barroso commission, no? Right? Am I right?
Yeah, I will say so, it is.
It has a more social agenda.
Well, yeah, for the moment, then it was quite Commissioner Schmidt, which is the commissioner that is in charge for the jobs and working condition, made a very nice impression, in my opinion, at the beginning of his mandate. Now this emergency messed up a bit everything. But it's, for instance, it's nice to remember that this commission had in his own agenda the fact to do something to increase minimum wage or to support minimum wage, or also indeed, as I was mentioning before, to provide a system for the support of unemployment persons. Also, there was an initiative regarding platform workers to increase the working condition. So there are stuff that in theory should be happening. The doubt is whether they will still happening now.
And so now, this is a nice link actually, because so before COVID-19 kicked in and all the financial measures and different measures that you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast were put into place, we were still talking about the European Pillar of Social Rights. Mm. Where does this fill in now? Where did it go?
Good question. I don't know. That basically is still everywhere, I guess, because the pillar has a very interesting feature, in my opinion at least, which is the fact that as a twofold nature. So the pillar was created as very much interlinked with a strategy to support the economy of the European Union, and it was indeed made in order to adapt national labor and social policy to the need for a competitive economy.
Mm-hmm.
And this meant a very strong accent on the functioning of the labor market.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the pillar is a very useful instrument to have to support living and working condition, to increase those working conditions. So the nature is a bit double, I will say. And from the first aspect, the one where the pillar is quite interconnected with the support of the economy, about the labor market, well, we see the European Union is actually taking action because it has provided those funds which support public spending in order to support business and maintain employment.
Like the SURE initiative that you mentioned before.
I would say so. Yeah, I would say
it's going into the direction of the European pillar. Yeah.
Fits well. And then there is the other aspect of the pillar providing more, better working condition and less inequality and all these nice things. And this crisis put a big question mark on what future labor policy are going to be taken. And we don't know yet.
Mm. Now, when we go back, because we are still at the European Union level, go back to the national level, how would this measure be put into place at national level, practically speaking?
I said that we don't know yet precisely, but what can we say is that all these measures are indeed financial support to the member state.
Mm-hmm.
So those measures allow the all member state to increase its own public spending.
Mm-hmm.
Without pay quite a lot in interest rate that are connected with normal increase of public spending, because when a country wants to increase its indeed public spending, normally can do two things, or increase taxation, which in this moment does not seem a very nice option, or go into the market and borrow money. Mm. But the money that
increase
a country
speculation.
Borrows, exactly. And every time each loan is connected with a cost, and the cost is the interest that the country has to pay together with the loan. To wrap up, the European Union is providing financial instruments that allow member states to reduce those costs in loans, to reduce the interest rate. So this means that the European Union has allowed the country to spend more, and this public spending is extremely essential to provide income support, to provide short-time schemes and mechanisms, and to try to save people from poverty. This is very much interlinked. We don't know how, though.
Yeah. Now, basically, well, I think this wraps up our discussion on the European measures. And what it is clear is that, as you said it several times, the measures put into place that you described are mainly financial support to member states. The member states need to put into place these measures, but basically they are just being allowed by the European Commission and the EU institution to spend more. A, to save the economy, B, to provide income support for workers and for the citizens, and B, to avoid, and C, to avoid speculation from financial markets. Now, Silvia, the Italian part. So we are both Italians. We cannot have a podcast, the two of us, without talking about the situation in Italy. Reaction have been to let's talk about one thing. So first, the reactions to the European measures in Italy. They were quite intense, right? I mean,
yeah, there was a nice drama around it. It was it was very good for journalists, I think.
Yeah.
So basically, in my perception, at least, also because I live abroad like you, the impression was that whatever the European Union was trying to negotiate or to make regarding financial support was really much absorbed by a political discussion in Italy. So we saw a lot of passion, even among people who absolutely have no idea about how these things go, regarding whether the European Stability Mechanism was good or bad, regarding Corona Bond, regarding this Recovery Fund. So there was a big faction in the European, in the national parliament, this five-star movement, for instance, that really portrayed the ESM as a pact with the devil, which, maybe was in the past, but now has changed. Tell me.
Yeah, and what about the euro bonds then? Because everybody's talking about euro bonds.
Yeah, it was quite normal, because at a certain point, I remember the president of the head of the government, Conte, in this speech to the nation, really explicitly urged the European Union to adopt this euro bond, corona bond, as you want to call it. And then people start a lot talking about that. Well, in my understanding, Eurobond are instrument that will allow country to increase indeed their public spending by borrowing money on the market at an interest rate which will be better, so lower, than the interest rate that normally country will manage to obtain. But this is only valid for those countries who have a very high public debt, like Italy, Spain, Greece, and so forth. So this is not a good option for the Nordic country or the countries that have a low public debt. And the reason for this quite advantageous interest rate that comes with the Corona bond is that the loans that the country gets through the market is guaranteed by all other member states. Yeah. So in a way, there is a partial mutualization of loan.
Yeah.
And this is something which, is very hard to agree on.
Yeah,
I would say
absolutely. Can you tell us a bit more about, the reception now, the Eurobonds, we know, but the reception of other instruments, perhaps, in Italy, how would they be activated? For instance, the ESM.
We already can imagine a way, because DSM, if because we absolutely know our government is against it, but if it would be activated, that means there will be money injected into the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. And as we say before, that cannot be negative per se as a result. And we can talk about implication and enter into detail, but yeah. More money for the healthcare system can be anyway a good thing.
Yeah.
Then we mentioned the share mechanism, and that will indeed help the national government to sustain the expenditure related to income support mm-hmm. and short-time schemes, which are really much needed at the moment. Because indeed, the national government suspended and basically established a prohibition to dismiss. So we can imagine how many people, how many workers are in a short time at the moment.
Yeah.
So that would be definitely.
But actually,
important.
A nice thing that I witnessed from abroad in the case of Italy is that the Italian government took steps that could have actually been taken, we could argue, even a few months or a few years ago, in order to protect and sustain income of atypical workers, the so-called in Italian partita IVA. No? Is that correct? Is it a reading that you also see? The fact that actually, I mean, this crisis has led the government to take initiative to protect lower income, basically, or people who actually are self-employed or atypical workers, as we call them usually in our environment, that could have taken maybe a few years ago even, but now with the crisis, it was suddenly very much needed, and this category of workers now are protected. Am I right?
Yeah. I also had the same reading, and actually, I'm happy about that. It's a nice thing to see, because it was not obvious mm-hmm. knowing how those type of workers are often forgotten by mm-hmm. the social protection in Italy, mm-hmm. and indeed the most important of the legislative measures that have been adopted to face this corona crisis, the so-called Cura Italia or Heal Italy, provided for direct financial support to all those in working but not in an employment contract, so including these atypical workers or self-employed. The amount is low, I would say, 600 euro for the first month, and now increasing to 800. But it's a sign, I will say, because those categories are always, often at least, had the impression to be forgotten by the state. And this time instead, it was a good, I think it's a good step.
And other steps that were taken by the Italian government to, other measures that the Italian government took in order to fight the coronavirus, from a labor law perspective and an economical perspective, obviously.
Yeah, there were many.
I'll say a few so that we get a bit sense.
Yeah, you're right. Well, the first is indeed to expand and to relax the rule for companies to enter in this short-time scheme. So basically, companies are forced to suspend the working activity. Nevertheless, workers will receive an income, mm-hmm. Which is, I believe, the 80% of the normal income.
Yeah.
Through public finance. Then there is an extension. There is the state is providing for parental leave to those that are actually in lockdown but have to work. And this is also something new because it's also given to self-employed that normally were not acceding to this measure. And I would say the most impactful measure is indeed the prohibition to dismiss for economical, technical, organizational, and productive reason. So only few countries did that in Europe, and I believe it's important to really prevent people to fall in the median poverty. Yeah. I would say.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Some limitations to this. Have you seen? Because we talk about the positive. What are the limitations that you see in the different measures taken by the Italian government?
Well, the limitation may be, someone will say that it's not enough.
Yeah.
To point more precise point, we can say that, for instance, this lump sum that was given for the first time to self-employed was not very well thought about, I think, because it was a 600-year lump sum to be given to all self-employed, regardless of their income.
Yeah.
And at least this is what I've read from the law. Mm-hmm. So this has led to abuse of people that still have an income or high income.
Obviously.
But this has been prevented, I read, for April and May. Another point, which is quite critical but very difficult to approach, is that in Italy there is a portion of people working in an informal economy, so without a real labor contract or any type of contract, and those are excluded from this income support. So this is these are aspects that are quite serious, I think.
Yeah. Now, when we talk about workers in Italy, we see that Italy has taken very severe lockdown measures, limiting people to go out of their house unless they have a good reason. Now, I mean, there will be a relaxation and a beginning of a phase two, but for the past 2 months, they have been quite tough.
Definitely.
What about the right to strike? Because, we are approaching May 1st. What about the right to strike?
I actually read that in some, I'm aware that in some countries the government had imposed quite strong and visible limitation on fundamental rights, among which the right to strike.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that in Italy, trade unions are not being directly negatively affected. Actually, there has been the willingness from the government to involve social partners in the decision more connected with the management at the company level.
So social dialogue is still happening, and this is a positive thing.
Yeah. The trade unions and the business organization have indeed signed two protocols on how companies have to implement health and safety measure. There are even quite harsh clauses. For instance, if the health and safety measure do not respond to the standard which should be provided, the activity of the company needs to be suspended until those standards are being implemented. And these are rules that have been negotiated among the social partners. Mm. There was a moment where the head of the CGL, Landini, initiate somehow the discussion about a strike, but this did not take place at the end.
Do you want to say something, because we are ending this discussion, but would you like to say something about a typical worker striking in Italy, or should we leave it here?
Well, if you want, we can. I mean, more than in Italy, I read that in general, this is something that has been happening, especially in relation to one company.
Yeah.
I would say that, I mean, this company made the heading of the news in a way, and that is Amazon.
Yeah.
And maybe it's the fact that this Amazon has been the winner from this catastrophe. I read that has been hiring 75,000 workers and so forth. So the fact that those workers, or some of those workers, are initiating strike action is can be a good sign, in a sense that bring visibility to the bad working condition that characterize the warehouse in Amazon. On the other hand, I believe that there will be the moment for what is needed is actually a normative approach, more legal instrument to tackle what's happening.
Basically at the...
It's an interesting development.
Yes, basically a legal instruments to regulate the working condition of platform workers.
Yeah. I think those strikes are a sort of a bell or an alarm that points to the fact that something need to be done in that respect. And also because Amazon is gaining more and more share of the market.
Absolutely. Also because people are buying online because most shops are closed.
To stay home,
But we will talk about this just as a heads up for the people listening. We will be talking about this in an upcoming podcast with Yandra Hopuli. We will be talking about atypical workers and workers working in platform on platform, and basically what was the impact of COVID on these workers. So thank you for mentioning this, Silvia, so that basically we can it's a nice continuation to the discussion we will be having. Now, last two questions, always the same for each and every one of you. Do you have a good news? Because we might need, we really need a good news. Do you have a good news, or do you feel like there is something good happening despite, living in times of a pandemic and soon of an economic and financial crisis?
Well, actually, maybe yes, maybe I'm optimistic, but I do, because I do sense more feeling of solidarity, but more than from a political level, I'm really talking about people. I see people accepting quite a deprivation of their own freedom for something that they perceive as being the common good, and this is quite beautiful in my opinion. And there are widespread expression of solidarity and willingness to help those who are more in need, and it's something that I think, well, it's sad that we are seeing that in this moment of catastrophe, but it's maybe a good sign and saying there is more hope for the future.
Yeah, this is a good silver lining. And it's true. I also witnessing myself, there is more awareness also on health and safety at the workplace. I mean, at least people are talking about it. Before, was actually aware. Not in our circles, obviously, but let's say with random family members, nobody was even aware of safety standards being put at the workplace and even the work of unions. So I think this crisis has a good impact, at least on our work. Now, Silvia, you live in Brussels, right?
Yes.
So how are you surviving our Brussels and Belgian lockdown?
Well, it's weird, can I say? It's really weird. To be honest, the past couple of, even 3 weeks, this was perfect springtime, was very nice weather, was a bit ironic, but that also made our quarantine time less depressing, I would say. And also, I'm getting more or less used to this type of life, and this makes me a bit worried for my own mental health, I guess, but I think it's something that we need to do, and I see also people around me more or less finding a new normality into this crazy situation, and so we are holding on, and we shall see. I really look forward this lockdown to be over, to be able to see people again. This is what I miss the most, I would say.
But finding a new normality, this is my mantra for the next couple of days. Thank you, Silvia.
Thank you.
Thank you, Silvia, for this nice chat we had with you over the measures that the EU put into place, very detailed and very comprehensive. So I thank you very much, because finally I can get some sense of all the different instruments that were put into place. How do they fit into national measures? What is the impact on labor law? And then finally, a word on Italy. So thank you very much for bringing me back home.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to E2White Podcast, Voices on the World of Work with Silvia Rainone. If you like this episode and want to know more about it, check on our website, e2white.org. Follow us on social media, and why not even subscribe to anchor.fm/E2I. By the way, we are also on the different other platforms available for podcasts. So if you have an app on your phone and you're listening to podcasts, please subscribe to our channel. stay safe out there from Brussels. This is all. Bye bye. Ciao.